Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. We're in conjunction with Slick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina, home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America that focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We'll cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web app. GridironGreatsMagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Varga. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the show.
Great to be back, Bob. Great to be back. I absolutely get a Cheshire cat grin when you do your football, and I can't even do it justice, but it's so cool. I think I've talked about this before. We should get a ringtone of that. How do we do that? What do we have to record it? We have to get you into a sound studio behind one of those microphones.
It'll be one of the most popular ringtones in America for football card and memorabilia fans.
Another thing we could do grab like 30 shows in a row of you saying this and then just kind of splice them together.
Oh, that'll be exciting, I'm sure.
Yeah, we need somebody with some babies.
Okay, anyways, yeah, I digress. That's funny. Anyways, tonight we have, actually this afternoon, we're going to be doing a general open forum. We got one guest lined up for next week on Monday show, and then I'm going to be taking a short break for a couple of weeks going on vacation, and then in June we'll be back with some all new shows. But we have a lot of what I like to call open discussion issues that we're going to go over this afternoon, and I think they're well worth speaking about and talking about. And I'm going to lead off before we get into our main this today. I did a card show in Wilmington, North Carolina this past Saturday, last week. And very, very interesting crowd that came. And the one thing I find very interesting here is that shows start at 10 a.m. And all the shows I did up in New England all started at 9 a.m. And a lot of that, I really don't know the reason why, but it does to me work better down here with an opening at 10 a.m. because around 9:30, quarter to 10, you got a line out the door of people wanting to get into the show. And as soon as the show actually opened, they started letting customers in about 10 of 10. By 11 o'clock, you really couldn't move in the show. I mean, there were a lot of tables were 2 and 3 deep with people, with customers, and there was a lot of active buying going on, so on and so forth. What I found very interesting through the whole show was I got a lot of compliments from people saying, you're the only person, or the only dealer here that actually has vintage football cards. And I had a lot of non-card items, meaning that I had a lot of publications, photos, things of that nature. And a lot of people looked at a lot of different areas of my tables, two tables, and I tried explaining to them and educate them on different items that I had. And it was pretty interesting to hear reactions from folks there with regards to what I had and stuff they had never seen before, so on and so forth. And one thing I was just totally amazed by, I had one fellow, I would guesstimate he was in his late 20s, early 30s. He said in all the years he had been collecting and all the shows that he had gone to, he never saw Bowman football in hand. Can you believe that? I was just shocked by that.
No kidding.
That he had never seen and never held an actual Bowman football card in his hand at a show. And I didn't have a lot of Bowmans. You know, I probably had maybe, you know, 15, 20 from 50 to 55 on my table. But I was just shocked by that. So, again, you know, what I used to take for granted is no longer something I'm going to take for granted anymore, because I think a lot of people have never seen stuff that I brought. And in turn, it's educating the public on different items. And like I told them, you know, 90% of my table was basically football, with a handful of boxing items and a handful of basketball items that I had. It was minimal. However, the winner of the show continues to be slab-graded basketball cards at insane prices. I'm just so shocked by the whole thing. And to see these teenagers with their backpacks and their little card cases and their briefcases walking around, you know, basically you think you're making $1 million transaction there with the trades that were going on and so on and so forth. And one kid came up to me, and it was so cute. He showed me a card, and I said to him, I haven't a clue what that card means, what it represents, and who the player is, so on and so forth. So then he educated me and says, well, you know, this is a PSA 10. I said, well, yeah, I can see it's a PSA 10. It doesn't do anything for me.
I'm no stranger to that.
Because I don't collect graded cards, nor do I collect basketball cards. And he explained to me, you know, the significance of it. I said, well, you got a really nice card in hand. So he says, well, do you want to trade for something? I said, no, not at all. I said, I have no desire to own that card. I said, you probably do better with somebody who deals in basketball. And I would say out of all the dealers there were probably 6 guys that just dealt in basketball. So they were, you know, that would be a card they'd be hot and heavy for and so on and so forth. But it was just amazing to me to see the interaction with graded cards. And I guess it's gearing myself up for repeat in Chicago when I go out there to see the backpack warriors with the graded basketball going table
backpack
to table
warriors
packing their wares there. So my observation is on the show.
You and I were texting back
very
and forth about this. I remember out of curiosity 10 years ago, wondering in proportion of how many registered sets there were and how many total graded cards there were, what the ratios were between the sports, the big four. Baseball is obviously the leader. Let's, for lack of a better number, let's say they had 1,000 PSA sets. Football was exactly half. Football had 500, and at the time, basketball had 250, and hockey had 125. It was literally a double up you know, hockey to basketball to football to baseball. And you would see the same in auctions. It would be like baseball, you know, if you'd open an auction and it'd be, you know, open to the categories, it'd be baseball, football, other, you know, and the other would be, you know, your basketball, your, I forget what auction it was, but the other day I opened it and the top like 30 items were modern basketball cards, you know, the black bordered Kobe Bryant, you know, 1995 refractor, you know, Donner, you know, yeah. that stuff we make fun of. It is painfully obvious that basketball, modern stuff, what you're seeing has overtaken football. I mean, it's weird to think.
But I did not see what was interesting to me at the show, and I did get around a little to look at a few tables. What I found really interesting was there really wasn't much graded football anywhere. Both modern or vintage, there was very little vintage cards anywhere. I basically had the most vintage cards of any dealer there, and all my vintage was raw. And I probably had at least, I would say, 150 single vintage cards, 72 and back, all basically football with a handful of boxing cards that I have. And that was it. And everybody else, I did see some graded baseball, newer graded baseball. I did not see virtually any hockey whatsoever, except hockey wax boxes, brand new ones. And I did not see, I did not see much graded football, especially newer graded football. I did see a lot of boxes of new football wax, which I have no interest in. But, again, I saw a few dealers sell those. So that I thought that was interesting. And I don't know if there's a store in where you guys are on the West Coast. It's called Lids. They sell baseball caps of the teams and all that stuff. So there's one down here. We were shopping yesterday in a mall, and I went into the store, and I was shocked. The guy had the store had a nice display of cards for sale of all sports, basketball, football, baseball, hockey, some Pokemon ones, and in like a pretty big rack, a lot of wax boxes and a lot of wax packs. And the prices were relatively reasonable. I didn't, you know, it's what I saw in Walmart for pricing. I asked the guy, you sell a lot of boxes and a lot of packs? And he says, he sells more boxes than the packs. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So that was another observation on my part on seeing it. I was just shocked to see it in a store like that. But it should have that. That's a nice, you know, nice complimentary good for their caps, you know. But
I love your story about the gentleman who'd never seen a Bowman, and it kind of made me chuckle I'll go for it.
No, I was just shocked by them.
Yeah. And I don't want to make fun of someone who's never seen a vintage car. That's counterintuitive. But it kind of reminded me of the first time I ordered a 61 Fleer card, and I ordered it raw. And if you look at the 61 Fleer cards, they have a little dot, like a little tiny green dot, the size of like somebody accidentally put a pen on it. And the first Fleer card I got, I went, oh, shoot, somebody put a dot on that. And I went to kind of try and erase it, and it wouldn't undo. And I'm like, oh, what the heck, man? That sucks. How did I not notice that? And then ditto, I remember ordering a 65 Fleer card, a 65 Topps tall boy. And I knew it was called a tall boy. I didn't know why. And I got this card. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
What in the hell is this?
Wow.
So, I mean, we can make fun of someone about, you know, I've never seen a Bowman. I don't know which year you're talking. I mean, you know, but it made me chuckle because I just remember the first couple times I saw some odd cards and you're just like, huh, you know, I mean, I was modern. I was 78,
I ended up,
79 and on.
I'll tell you, I ended up, I gave him a good deal on some 55s and I said, you know, here's a starter set if you ever want to, you know, one day pursue something really nice and vintage and affordable and you could do it raw with no problem. And he understood what I was saying. I think he was very much up to what I was explaining to him. He wanted to learn about it. He wanted to see about it. You know, he wanted to, you know. The only way you're gonna learn about anything, you got to have a physical in your hand. You got to own it. And, yeah. You know, you go from there. And if you want to make a decision a couple years from now, you got a little more disposable income, you buy more of it, and you put the set together, that kind of situation. And I can almost guarantee the next show there is going to be in August. And I'm hoping he's going to be there because I'm going to bring a lot more 55 Bowmans, and I'll give him a good deal on them just to get him started in the set and doing some vintage cards. And then I'm not shocked by what somebody says to me anymore at a show, because I think a lot of dealers and a lot of collectors are so focused on the modern stuff because it's easy to buy, and they're looking for, a lot of them are looking just for the payday, you know, crack open the box and you get the $500 insert card, get it graded, blah, 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 that whole bit. So I understand that, but, you know, again, if we're going to have any market for vintage, we got to get some new blood in here to collect the vintage. That's what it's all about. And the only way you're going to do it, you're going to educate people. That's what it comes down to. And yeah. I did have some issues of Gridiron Greats. I gave them a few, and I said your homework for tonight is to read all this and look at it. And he kind of laughed when I said it to him. But when he looked through the magazine, he says, "Oh wow, you got some national advertisers." I said, "Yeah." I said, you know, we've been around for a long time. So hopefully he'll pursue a different or some new paths in his collection. And it's worth it to see that happen and see a new collector come out for vintage yeah. football.
And
I have
heard
about vintage
open.
Football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was just going to go into that.
I happen to have Heritage open because we're talking about it in a minute. One of the cards I'm watching is a 1961 Fleer Johnny Unitas PSA 9, because I collected the 61 Fleer set forever, and I was trying to put it together in 8 and 9. The second series of the 61 Fleer, easy to do. That first series,
yep.
You know, including the Unitas, the Brown, all the NFL stuff, the AFL stuff was easy, the NFL stuff really hard. So this Johnny Unitas card is really rare. But I clicked on it to see it, and there's the green dot is down in the white lower border between the team logo, the team mascot, and the name. And it's just this tiny little green dot. I remember, I remember getting it and trying to erase it. Anyways, that's my embarrassing story. I've opened the kimono. So onto the Heritage auction, which ends tonight. I love Heritage. Always comes up with some good stuff, and seems like they continually, once a month or so, have an auction that's rolling out. Ending tonight is a PSA. We don't like to talk about that little round white ball that people hit with a stick, but ending tonight is an iconic card, a 52 Topps Mickey Mantle PSA 7. It's at $240,000 plus
wow.
The buyer's premium in there. I watch those cards. I own one baseball card. And that is a 52 Topps Mickey Mantle. And I love that card.
Wow.
So, but football-wise, there is a PSA 6 Bronco Nagurski 1935 Chickle card 34 PSA 6 Nagurski for sale in Heritage. It ends tonight, 8 hours left, in case you're listening to this show and you want to jump in on there, ha.com. And it is currently at it's currently at $77,500. So if you want to get your bid in, you're going to have to pay $80,000, which is $96,000 with buyer's premium.
What's the premium?
BP's 20%. Yeah, but we
okay.
were
okay.
discussing this card on VFC, which is vintage football. Our chat rooms, our boards, where most of us, vintage football collectors, go to get all of our information. Jeff Payne's the moderator there. And the common, a lot of people are talking about it. Bob, what are your thoughts on this Nagurski?
I think it's going to break 100 before the buyer's premium. And I also think that 35 Chickle is basically gold. And especially – the big boys, the nag is always going to be, whether it's a PSA 1, whether it's ungraded, whether it's a PSA 9, which to me is impossible, it's always going to be an in-demand valued card. I cannot believe, honestly, what I've seen happen with the 35 National Chickle over the years. And finally, in my opinion, it's really getting the respect that it should be getting as one of the first mainstream, the first mainstream football card that we look at and we view in our football card history and our football card collections.
And absolutely, totally agree.
We're it's right up there, but I think some big pockets are going to come out tonight, and it's going to bid up over 100K, and it'd be amazing to see.
What do you think of the borders of that Nagurski? And I agree, price wise, I think it ends at 90,000, which with buyer's premium would be 108. It's a PSA 6. I mean, at some point, it's a rare card, absolutely rare card. I agree with you, Captain, but it's, this just absolutely, hits a home run for pricing of this card and puts it in that iconic stratosphere. Price-wise, I think it ends at 90, which would be 108 with buyer's premium. So we're right in the range. We're within a couple shackles of each other. What do you think of the borders?
All right, well, getting back to the borders, I want to say, and I'm undecided about it. They look like there's a little touching at them, but maybe they're not. Maybe they're just actual. That's actually worn. I'm looking at it right now. I don't know. It's tough for me to say. What do you think? Trent?
My wife jokes around and calls me the catch and release, of 48 Leafs and 35 Chickle. I'm the guy who would order cards up simply so I could put them into the micrometer and measure them. I literally have a spreadsheet of the various 48 Leafs and Chickle cards that I would purchase raw and or graded. And then, raw, I could put the calipers right up to it. Graded, I would obviously have to use the, I'd get as close as I could while laying the calipers on top of, the case. And then I'd measure them and I'd just start looking at, I wrote that article, the 48 Leaf set and the card doctors who love it. And I was just talking about the variations of the border and then just seeing how skinny the card could get before it got slabbed and not slabbed. And it comes down to millimeters. And this card is somebody who's caught and released a lot of chickles. This card has most definitely had a haircut. I would say with 80% certainty, this card has been under the knife. There should be an equidistance of about, 10 millimeters of border. And, if it's 7 and 3, that's miscut. If it's 6 and 4, it's slightly off center. If it's 5 millimeters and 5 millimeters, it's center. Out of the 10 millimeters, I would say the top and bottom are the skinniest. And I would say you're looking at about 7 millimeters of border between the top and bottom. I mean, it's pretty bad. It's embarrassingly okay. Bad how bad this card looks.
Okay. Heard it from the expert.
Maybe.
And we're looking at.
I don't know if you were using air quotes when you said expert, but, that's my opinion. I wouldn't buy this. I mean, buy the card, not the grade, not the slab.
Right.
Somebody's going to buy this. Somebody's going to be paying six figures for this card. And the shame of it is, it's likely trimmed.
And that leads us to our next topic, and I'm going to hand it off back to you on a little tension in the hobby about graded cards and some trimming going on. Give us some background.
Yeah. Evan Mathis, who's an ex-professional football player, actually won a Super Bowl ring with the Eagles, I believe, wasn't it? I'm not a huge I don't know Evan Mathis as well, but so this guy's got a ring. He was also a big collector. And for a long time, you know, collecting football cards, if you're a pro player collecting, you know, cards, that's kind of cool. So he had a lot of popularity. Well, he retired from football and he went into collecting cards full time. Burning the village down moment. 2 weeks ago exactly, he posted a TikTok video of him basically, you know, pulling the curtain back to expose the great and powerful Oz and, you know, propping himself out there as an expert card doctor. And in there, he showed himself trimming cards using a laser cutter. He showed himself how he, you know, took an emery board, a nail file, to get the striations on the card correct, how he would put the card into a top loader and use something, you know, to round the corners down so that they, you know, they looked factory cut. And then to me, the worst part of that is he used a power eraser, which I'd heard about before, but I'd never seen one in action. He used a power eraser, which basically lifts the pigments of the ink off of the cardboard. And he used that to remove part of the ink to better center the card. He also put wax paper over a card and rubbed it to, you know, put the sheen back on it after power erasing it. He showed about five or six things that were very, very damning. And it begs the question, but what can be done to, you know, TPGs, third-party grading, they have to crank out. They have to spend about 45 seconds or less analyzing a card to see if it's, you know, been doctored of some sort. You know, if you're good, if you're trimming off a 64th of an inch and then putting wax on it and then rounding the edge down, that's very, very hard to detect at the pace TPGs are going. So it begs the question, what can be done about expertly trimmed cards to help TPGs catch it? And then also, how many trimmed cards have slipped by the goalie and are now rattling around in cages or in plastic cases forever? I mean, once it gets, once you trim a card and it gets a PSA 10, no one's ever breaking that out.
The way I look at it, I again reiterate, I'm very happy I never got into graded cards. And number two, this is really a multi-million dollar business now. I think it's up to the businesses grading to start to really step up and improve and eliminate the threat of short cards being graded, these kind of grades. For what reason, other than to create more, you know, more value, more cash for whoever is doing it? And again, something like he posted, and I watched it, and I was basically sick after I saw this one.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, I can only imagine at the time, and we talked about this numerous times in the past, when it comes time for me to sell my collection, I think I'm going to actually have a contract written up that you can't grade these cards. They can't be physically graded, because I can only see a lot of my cards, somebody trying to do that to them. And then they got a PSA 9, let's say 52 Bowman or whatever type of thing. It's ridiculous. And it's unethical. And just because it becomes a money-driven situation, collectors have to suffer that. And again, whoever's going to buy that nag has to realize that may not be a perfect card. That really may not be a PSA 6. That may be a trimmed card, which in my opinion, yeah, it's going to have value, but it's not going to be worth $100,000 to anybody. So, yeah, you're right. What can be done to do it? Well, whatever's not being done really needs to be done. And I think it's just really, they really need to step up and say, we got to come up with a better solution. We have to come up with better measurement of cards when we're getting them in raw so that we can start separating, hey, this is an eighth of an inch off. This is a 64th of an inch off. This is not a PSA 10. This is a trimmed third. And, you know, with him doing what he did, and again, we've talked about this numerous times on the show also, and knowing who were the big card doctors in the hobby over the years, you know where the cards came from. You know how the cards were touched up. Why would you still touch the cards? Because you're just driven to buy that PSA graded card, and that's it. You're not worried, or whatever, an SCC graded card, whatever it may be. So, I don't know. I don't have a solution on it. And you know what? I'm getting tired of it myself, because it really gives the hobby a really bad reputation.
Yeah. It's exactly why I got out of collecting the 48 leaf set, is I just started seeing. I knew enough about the set to know, you know, better than most, with, again, 80% certainty, what cards were trimmed and not. When I'm buying leaf cards, I'm buying them with, you know, robust borders. And then I'm measuring them. And then I'm entering, you know. And so when I started seeing PSA 8, you know, Bob Waterfield cards that were below the tolerances I'd seen before, literally, so for, you know, 6 years, I was measuring cards and seeing what the minimum border was to get into a slab. And then all of a sudden, one day, the floodgates opened, and I started seeing cards that were, you know, a couple millimeters below what had been that threshold forever. And it was kind of weird. I mean, two millimeters on a 50 millimeter card is 2%, very noticeable to the eye, you know. So I could just see them getting through. And if you know what you're doing, you're not buying a card that looks that skinny. And that was devaluing my entire collection, even though my collection was fat bordered. That's when I decided to get out of it. I don't have any high PSA cards right now. Seeing card doctors slip 48 leaf cards by the goalie changed the entire way I collect. I sold most of my high-grade cards off because I could just see that the card doctors were getting better than the card graders. And right now I collect mid-grade rare cards. I mean, if you've got a Mayo Dunlap card, you don't really care what the grade is. An SGC 10 is a pretty cool card if it's aged well. An SGC 30 card, nobody's trimming these to try and get them in. It's just having the card is a wonderful thing. You're agnostic to the grade almost at some point. These are so rare. I mean, right. I don't know. For me, seeing how it was, you know, getting by the goalie is what really turned me off from the hobby and moved me more towards uncut sheets. I mean, you know, I have uncut sheets. What I've gone towards. You can't doctor that,
right? I've said this numerous times. It shows in the 1980s, I rarely saw near mint 48, 49 leaf, 48 Bowmans. I never saw those cards. On occasion, I'd probably see maybe one or two cards I would grade today, X or X plus, or possibly X near mint. And they were nice cards. And that's all I saw. I didn't see this deluge of perfect, beautiful 48 perfectly cut 48, 49 leaf cards out of nowhere. And if to me, don't lie to me and say that those were not trimmed in mass, because they were. They were. And I know a couple of people say to me, I always look for a fat border 48 leaf. I say, good luck to you. Because I said, I think every 48 leaf has literally been bought up and trimmed to try to get a good grade on it. In all seriousness, I still got a handful of 48 leaf that I bring to shows, and I don't even bring them. You know, I don't even talk about it anymore. And I had one guy, I think probably in the last 5 years, buy one 48 leaf for me just because he was a team collector, and that was it. You know, I had never talked to anybody in years who was actually putting the set together. And a lot of the reason why is what you just, you know, talked about. That's crazy. It's crazy. It's really hurt the hobby. I don't care. I care what anybody says. It has given the hobby a black eye. As much as everybody tries to spin it every which way, and everybody, you know, says, oh, you know, it happens. That's it. You know, in other hobbies, things can be catched up and they're accepted as new, blah, blah, blah. Well, that was never part of our hobby. I've been collecting cards since 1965. I never once in a show in the 1970s or 1980s have or look at something that was touched up, because nothing was touched up. That all of a sudden with the boom in the early 90s, all of a sudden, oh, you know, maybe we do this, maybe we do that, but this card will be a near mint card. And then throw in the grading equation 10 years after that, and, you know, all heck breaks loose, and that's it. Not right. No, it's really not right. And were you at the National where he was there, the guy even, and evident, and he was either set up or whatever, and he was near, I was with John and Andy at BST MSB that year, and he came over to the table, and he was, I don't know what he was doing, he was trying to sell something or whatever. I really didn't listen to the guy. And they did not purchase it from him. I want to say it might have been 2016. I'm not sure. I could be way off.
I wasn't there when he came over, but I heard about it at pizza later. He back then he had the star power. When he came up, people,
that's right.
You know, to be able to say I bought a card from Evan Mathis was a big deal. Now it's a black eye. Where'd you get this? Evan Mathis. Oh, hell no, I'm not buying that.
Yeah. So I distinctly remember that. And again, you know me, I'm the type, I don't get overly impressed with the celebrity coming to the table. And the last Chicago show, sitting up there with Josh, I still remember Dennis Rodman came over to the table next to us, and basically our sale shut down for a half hour while I was there. But I'm saying to myself, the guy looks like he was 100 years old, and I can't believe he has any type of staying power anymore whatsoever, star power whatsoever, because he looked like a shell of himself. He looked in bad shape one way or the other. But came back to, you know, card doctoring and trimming and so on and so forth. Why do you think he actually did what he did? That's what I'm curious about.
There are a couple things on, you know, some other, you know, sports related websites is he invested, you know, a lot of his money. Invested it and, he got swindled. So if you take half of your wealth and invest it, you know, hoping to make money on it, and it goes away, and you're like, I got screwed, hence let me screw, you know, hell with it, I'm going to burn the institution down. So it's basically Evan trying to get back in with PSA, make a little bit of money. He was just on a podcast a couple days ago, Western Conference Hobby Dream, that I plan on listening to. I want to listen to that, because apparently on there he justifies it as everybody else is trimming, why not me? Which would be the same thing, you know, other people are robbing banks, why can't I do it? I mean, it's, you know.
Exactly.
So apparently he needs the money. I mean, which is a weird thing to say about somebody who played professional ball. I mean, you know, I'm sitting in front of my computer. How much money did Evan Mathis make in his computer or in his career? Mathis career earnings. What would you call that? Yeah. Career earnings. Signed a two-year, $2 million contract with the Philadelphia Eagles. Career earnings, $25 million. Wow, that's actually some pretty good moolah. Panthers.
Subtract his agent fees, so that's at least 10%. So he's got over $20 million.
So if you say 25% minus 10% would be 22.5. Let's say 8 of that goes to the government. $13 million.
Yeah, that's
you know, and, yeah. you know, minus, you know, 500 a year of expenses. So let's say he ended up after, you know, from playing from 2005 to 2016, he had an 11-year career. You know, that's it's not quite FU money, you know, getting out of there, you're retiring with $5 million in the bank. But right. I mean, it's a lot of money, but you know, let's call it $8 million. Let's say he retired with $8 million in the bank, and he lost four of it, you know, on a bad investment.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Wow. Wow. That is amazing.
That's weird to look at.
That is really amazing.
Yeah.
But again, you know, what will? Let me look at it in a different perspective. Look at all the different hobby crises we've seen over the past basically 20 years. The problems at auctions with trill bids, all the different problems now with trim cards and breeding and so on and so forth. And it just doesn't seem to get resolved. It doesn't seem to change anything. Will this situation now, because he was such a prominent player in the hobby, will this situation finally bring to light that, hey, we really got to do something or we're not going to have a hobby? Am I examining a worst case scenario here? Am I overreacting? Should I just ignore this? I don't know. I mean, you know, I've had a couple of people ask me about it, and I say, I resolve it in my own way. I don't buy any graded cards. And then I can get local dealers to say, well, how can you not be selling graded cards? Because I said, I won't sell them. I have no reason to. Why would you want to buy a card that you got out of a pack, send it to a grading company, and get it back as a whatever, a PSA 10 or SGC 100 or whatever it is, just to say you had it? And then you now made that $10 card now a $500 card, and look at all the money I made. Okay, so what has that done for the hobby? You've made your quick buck,
yeah,
and that's about it. You know, you're not creating a hobby where people are collecting more than just one or two of those cards, and that's it. You know what I mean? They should come out with a wax
yeah.
pack that just has an insert card, one insert card in one pack in a 36-pack box. So you buy 35 packs that won't have anything in it, and you get one card that has the one pack that has a card in it. That'd be the ultimate, don't you think? I mean, it would save all this money.
Yeah.
And they could just put in like a blank board saying, you know, loser, you know, there's nothing in this pack. You just spent $100 for this pack and it's worthless. I mean, it's the same concept, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's like buying a scratch-off card.
It,
you know, the lottery.
It turns off a lot of people in the hobby, totally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, it's farcical for me. Farcical. Bad. That's really bad. This to me is, I don't think it's going to go away soon, and I'm really wondering what the vibe's going to be at the National about it. If that's going to be the talk of the show, or it's just going to be ignored and that's it. You know what I mean? And the kicker will be somebody comes up to me and says, you got any 48-leaf graded cards? And I'll just start laughing hysterically, you know, if they ask me that.
Well, if history is any indication, Captain, I think the hobby will react to this the same way it did WeWag, the same way it did to, you know, still the most valuable card, the PSA 8 Wagner, the same way it did, you know, to, you know, legendary auctions, the same way it did to, you know, to PWCC finding out that, you know, shill bidding. I mean, the same way it does, it's just people are aghast. It's like, holy crap. It's literally like, I know there are cockroaches in my house. I just don't want to see them. And if I ever see one, I'll
right,
be grossed
right,
out.
Right.
I want to kill, you know, it's tough.
That is such a great comparison stating that. And it's so true. You know, I got the termites eating up the house, but I'll just, you know, I'll throw another piece of plywood there and it'll be all right. It'll last for a couple more years. Until I sell it, type of thing. It's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
It's just truly amazing. And, you know, again, I continue to state all the time, if this hobby is going to survive, you got to get new blood in it, or our collections are going to be absolutely worthless. Might as well just get a dumpster right now, put them in the dumpster, and call it a day type of thing. And we don't want to do that. You know, and it's the same thing with me looking at publications in the hobby. I was kind of shocked at this past show, I had a couple guys buy some Sports Illustrated from me. And they said they always liked the covers, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was really cool that they were actually collecting. And then one guy said, yeah, I got a pretty nice collection of publications, but he only collected certain players and certain he was a baseball collector more than anything else. So I'm saying to myself, well, I got 50 Street and Smiths here. Not one person looked at one of them type of thing. They don't know what it is. They have no clue. They're not educated about it. And in their mind, they'd rather spend that same money in the chance to get a hot card so they can get it graded so they can make money at it. And that can't be the hot. Hobby won't survive based on that, which is a little intro for me to say in the upcoming national issue of Gridiron Greats magazine, I'm reviving my old Turning the Pages column that I wrote for Sports Collectors Digest back in the early 90s, which just is going to deal with football publications again. And I feel a need. I got to start talking about it in the hobby. And what better way to talk about it than in our magazine? And hopefully I'll spark some interest for some people to start collecting publications again. Because to me, publications are way undervalued right now. They are not wanted. And as we've said numerous times on this show, a lot of publications pre-World War II are just not going to be found anymore. They are rare beyond rare. And something to take into consideration when you're collecting, a new avenue for collecting and a new avenue to enjoy your collection. Other thoughts, if any, on the card grading, and then we're going to go into a couple other areas. Sorry, Joe, you're in charge. You're in charge of finding a solution to the card grading crisis. What are your thoughts, if any?
You know, we had Scott Alpa on as a guest about a year ago. Scott was a SGC grader at SGC for several years, you know, all the way up to head grader. He left there and went to work for, card dealer. Spent about a decade there. He was in charge.
Yeah.
Who was it? Anyway, he was in charge of, of acquisitions there. He's the guy who would go to a show and, you know, find the, you know, the PSA 5 card that looks like it could get a bump. You know, he'd find the raw card that's good. He knew the cards. So he was at collector's corner. No, that's not it. Excuse me. Anyway, he was there for a decade, and then about 3 years ago, he went to work at PSA as one of their head graders in charge of technology. I've talked to Scott quite a few times. There's a friend of mine who owns a company up here called DW Fritz, and they make microns and millimeters is their tagline, because they make machines that measure things. Like one of the things is let's say your laptop, you know, everything has to fit and have clearances in your laptop. Well, if you put something in there and doesn't quite have clearance, it'll rub, it'll short out, et cetera. So I was always saying how you could program that, to know all of the cards. Modern cards are harder, and then lasers come in and measure the card. Scanners come in and look at the surface. You're looking for, they have infrared, they have black lights. So in 2-3 seconds, you're paying $500,000 to $1 million for a machine, but it grades so much faster, and it grades so much more accurately.
Right.
And I was talking to him about it, and Scott's like, you have to get business. And most of the business comes from the dealers. And the dealers don't want to know that something's trimmed they want it slabbed. They get a consignment. If REA gets a consignment from someone and they send them the cards and, you know, a third of them come back as trimmed, that just makes it more difficult for them. They want things to be slabbed and they want to sell them. If you know, why would somebody cross over this PSA 6 Nagurski when they know it's trimmed? It's going to get rejected. So, I mean, he goes, that's a lovely business model, but no one's going to use you. The reason no one's going to use you is because they, you know, they don't like the rejection. And then, you know, people don't want to know. This is the dark secret. People don't want to know. Again, it's cockroaches. I know I have cockroaches, but I don't want to see them. Same thing. I know I have probably trimmed cards in my, you know, in my collection. I don't want to know. I'm not going to resubmit them. You know, I don't know. The answer is out there. There are digital measuring, you know, equipment and scanners and infrared and black lights that can give you an accurate assessment of a card.
Well, maybe
you wouldn't have the
business. You know, maybe the businesses need to invest in that. You know, maybe PSA and SVC and everybody else and Beckett need to start investing in that, you know, high-tech equipment and bite the bullet and just say, hey, we are foolproof. You got a trip card, you're not going to get it graded. Or we'll grade it and it's trimmed and you figure out what you got to do with it. And that's it. Simple. Why is that hard? Well, because of the initial cost of it is astronomical. Well, you know, you're a multi-million dollar business now. This is a multi-million dollar business. This is not me going into a candy shop and buying a 10-cent pack of cards anymore. You know? So that's what bothers me about it, you know? And again, being in business over the years in different businesses, I have to make an investment in equipment. You got to make an investment in equipment in your business. It's inevitable. If you don't want to make the investment, then, I can't feel sorry for you. You know what I mean? But again, you have the mentality, I don't want to know that my 48-leaf card is trimmed. I want to know that it's a PSA 10, and that's what I'm selling it for, even though it's shaken in the holder. You know what I mean? So it's sad. I mean, it bothers me. It really bothers me. So, again, in a way, I'm happy that I never got into the graded card frenzy, but at the same time, I don't think it's healthy for the hobby. And I'm been more for the hobby. I try to be for the hobby, and I try to be, you know, a legitimate spokesperson for the hobby and have people ask me my expertise in the hobby since I've been around such a long time. It bothers me to say to them, don't buy that card, even though it's graded that way, because the card is obviously trimmed and you're wasting your money. But I want graded cards. Well, maybe that's a set you should try to collect raw rather than graded, you know, and accept a lesser grade type of thing. You know, I want to see my cards handled.
Yeah.
I mean, my old cards are handled. That's it. Simple. 1965. Do you think I put my name up in what? What was I going to put it in back then? Wax paper? I don't know. I mean, I looked at the card. I read it. I played with it. I mean, it's ridiculous. Jeez. Unbelievable. All right,
yeah.
We got about,
I don't know,
5.5 minutes here. Again, if you're not subscribed to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for? Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. I will be set up at the National with Josh Adams, and I think it's called Midwest. He's got a new company. I got to get the name correct on it, which I'll pull up right now
Josh Adams
in a flash, but I will be there.
Had a rebrand?
Yeah, well, he's doing the he's got the auction company now, and he's doing 1990s auctions. Very successful, very interesting. He had a big inside back cover page ad last issue. Oh, 90sauctions.com. So I gave Josh a free plug on today's show. So check it out. I'll be there. When I find out the table number, I'll be posting it also at the same time. Joe, anything else on your mind? We've got it a little less than 5 minutes.
Wow. It's a tough subject for sure, Bob. I don't know the answer. I get, you know, as we always tell people, it's just educate yourself, know what you're looking for. You know, the people bidding on that, you know, PSA 6 Nagurski are probably it as it's slabbed. Therefore, it's good. So, I mean, it's, I don't know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the problem with that is people, rather than buying the card, they buy the slab, and that creates a lot of the issues that allow trimmed cards to survive all these years type of thing. And I'll tell you, when I collected the 35 Chickle set numerous times over the years, I really never saw much difference in the cards. In other words, I didn't really see any miscut 35 Chickles. They were all pretty, you know, pretty basic, you know. And I bought, you know, I did not buy any Jim Mint cards in any way, shape, or form. My 35 Chickle, the best 35 Chickles I had were BGEX at the best. You know what I mean? But I can't see how, like you're saying, because they're trimmed all of a sudden now, all these 35 Chickles have come to the market. And miraculously, they're in great condition, you know?
Hmm. Oh, well, educate yourself. Know what you're buying. Buy the card, not the slab. You know, all those things that we talk about, you know? But,
yeah, that's the most important thing. You know, you like a card, you like the way the card looks. And if it's raw, just buy it, and that's it. And, you know, maybe I don't know, have a set that has some graded cards and some raw cards in it. I don't know. I know a lot of people who tell me, well, I got this set, but I got the 3-star cards in the set. They're all graded. I said, okay, what's that do for you? Well, you know, that gives me the peace of mind that they're, you know, they're legit. I said, okay. They can listen to the show, and I say, well, and they can say to themselves, well, 3 cards I got that are whatever grade they are all trimmed. So how is this legit? You know, I don't know. It's tough call.
Hmm. Yep. Oh, well, yeah, we'll see how this auction
is what it is. We'll find out either late tonight, which I will not be staying up and watching, and I'll probably won't even check on it until at some point in the morning tomorrow. And that's it. I can rest easy tonight knowing my run is raw, and I want it to stay raw as long as possible. That's it.
All right. I call that the West Coast advantage, those you know, those auctions that end late, you guys going to bed.
Yeah, exactly. Those days are over for me, staying up late for auction. There's nothing out there that I'm that concerned about one way or the other. All right, we got about a minute, 2-minute warning, Joe. Hand it off to you. What'd you pick up on today's show?
You know, somebody out there, you know, some kid out there somewhere has an Evan Mathis jersey from when he was a star. You know, played with the Bengals, played with the Eagles, but someone has a jersey of his, and just like a lot of our heroes, when they retire, they go on to, you know, do other things, and I think that's a shame. Is, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I looked up this guy's salary, and I'd forgotten some of the places he'd played or where he was drafted, but, you know, it's weird. I mean, is this concussion? Is this CTE? You know, who knows? Or is it him just trying to make money now that he got scammed? But whatever it is, it's a shame. It's a blight on the hobby, on our beloved hobby.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we did it. Good job today beating it up. And we presented it like as we are real hobbyists in the hobby, trying to keep the hobby going. And I'll end it like that. We're pretty much out of time. Thanks for listening. We're going to be back next week. As I said, Monday, we've got another show with a guest coming up, and we'll be back then. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network. Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour. How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.